This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I am going to have a very special call from Mo. Now, you probably have seen him on Shark Tank, and he developed Mo's Bows, and he was 9 years old when he was on Shark Tank, and he's at the ripe age of 17. He has written a book, and it's called Mo's Bows, A Young Person's Guide to Startup Success. Measure, cut, stitch your way to a great business. And it is an absolutely delightful book, so I'm looking forward to talking to him. But I have today, so exciting for me, I have in the studio Bonsu Branvik. Hi, Bonsu.
Hello.
Well, Bonsu is what I call a warrior writer. You know, I get a lot of writers on the program, and they all have clever ideas for books. They all do a great job. But Bonsu is a real warrior because she tried to save a hotel. You know, not many people do that, but she tried to save the historic Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. And although she wasn't able to do that, that's a big thing to do, she did decide to write a series of books to honor the hotel and to keep the memory alive, and they are called The Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore. So yes. I'm so proud to know you, Bonsu.
Well, thank you so much.
You know, the story just of what you did and how you tried to save the hotel, I think is amazing.
Well, I really did, but now I've had to concede they saved about 8% of the hotel and made it into a little inn on the property. The exterior of it still looks like the Bellevue Biltmore. The interior, unfortunately, they chose a completely different design, but I hear it's lovely.
I don't know. We have to tell people. Well, for anybody who came to Florida, the Clearwater area, the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel was so beautiful, enormous. How many square feet was it?
820,000 square feet, not counting the full basement and the labyrinth of tunnels that ran underneath it or the attic spaces.
And Bonsu investigated every inch of that hotel before. She wasn't going to let them tear it down until she went to every nook and cranny in that hotel. And because you got brilliant ideas for your books.
I did, and now then, like I said, since they tore down the most of it, and there's nothing I could do about that, but I can preserve its history, and so I've done a tremendous amount of research so that even though my books are called mixed genre, because they are historic novels, but they are also contain elements of the paranormal, and as well as mystery and romance.
So that's where we get the spirits in the hotel. And each of the books, so far you've written three, and the fourth one is in the progress.
Nails will be the last one.
But the other ones are just fantastic, and they tell about a different era. Throughout the history of the Bellevue Biltmore. So we had started with Pearls.
Yes, and in each book, somebody will check in with problems in their lives, and those problems resonate with spirits. And of course, because each person who checks into the hotel is very different, their problems resonate with spirits from different times in the past. So the first book, Pearls, takes you back to the Victorian era. The second book is Ripples. That takes you back to the Prohibition era.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, that's when the speakeasy and that railroad smuggling alcohol really kept our area afloat during Prohibition and through the Great Depression. The third one is Redemption, and that takes place during the World War II era when over 3,000 soldiers were stationed at the Bellevue Biltmore.
Wow.
and Nails will be the final book, and that's dealing with the building of the hotel and the demolition of the hotel. So the past and present will combine, and that will be the final book in this series.
Now, speaking of nails, did you save some nails? Did you manage to take out some of the things?
I do. I've got wood, I've got keys, I've got a couple shingles, I've got, you know, all kinds of things. And fortunately, my readers hear about this, and they've sent me things from the Bellevue Biltmore.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah,
well, so. I think people do appreciate anybody who came to Florida and had the opportunity to go there. It was so beautiful, and I remember sitting there on the balcony with just enjoying mm-hmm. the environment, and it was so beautiful. And of course, the stairs were wide. Explain why the stairs.
Yeah, well, the whole walkways, the promenade corridor, the main corridor, everybody always asks why it's so wide. And I tell them because when the hotel was built, women were wearing hoop skirts.
Yeah.
And it had to be built wide enough that two of them could pass one another with their escorts comfortably.
Yeah, I always found that so fascinating to see how, you know, it was wide and to imagine all these people. And that's why I think your books are such a service to history, that you've kept these stories. And
I try and incorporate the actual history of the hotel in every detail that I can. Of course, the characters are imaginary and the situations are imaginary, but they all are situations that could actually have occurred.
But not
there.
All the characters are imaginary, because you weave in so many historical characters. Mm-hmm. Tell us some of the people who stayed in that hotel.
Oh, well, my gosh, it was everybody from Thomas Edison and Henry Ford. We had four of the United States presidents have stayed there. We had we've had dukes and princes.
And Babe Ruth.
The Prince of Wales. Oh, yeah, not to mention all the sports legends.
I take that drive to the mm-hmm. studio. Every time I come to the studio, I drive past the golf course there, and I just love to think of Babe Ruth playing,
playing golf there.
He loved golf. He actually mm-hmm. loved golf more than baseball, which is hard to imagine. But of course, in those days, you didn't make big money in golf, so he went into baseball. But I just love to imagine him there, isn't it?
Well, for me, it's always the imagination of Thomas Edison and Henry Ford sitting there talking together over the winters. And, because they would have stayed there for the whole winter. And the reason it was such a big draw was because it had a telegraph system. It had, they got newspapers daily. You know, they had coming down on the train because the train came right to the door of the hotel, and all these things. So it made it a great place for business.
Well, explain
people.
Why did the train come right to the hotel?
because Henry Plant, the man who built it, Henry B. Plant, built the railroad right to the door of his hotel, and it stopped there. And then you get off, and either you stay at his hotel or you figure out some kind of conveyance to go find some other place to
everybody
stay.
Everybody wanted to stay at the hotel. They just took one look at that beautiful building and said, mm-hmm. we're here, we're in Florida, and we're staying. And it had, of course, a beautiful view in those days. Mm-hmm. And it was
only open during the winter, of course, back then.
Yeah.
And people would travel they would season in, spend the winter season at the hotel. So things were a lot different. And then as times changed, the hotel changed along with it to accommodate as the tourist chip flipped over. It used to be wealthy people traveled for the season. And over time, it changed where everybody traveled, but in smaller amounts.
Yeah.
So the hotel changed as it grew. And like I said, they had added wings to it. The last wing was added in 1924. And that brought it up to its, grand size of 820,000 square feet.
Well, explain, you started writing Pearls. When did Pearls come out?
Pearls came out, it started writing it when the hotel was closed for a major renovation. And the plan was to restore the entire hotel back to its grandeur of, it was built in, it opened in 1897, but they wanted to restore it back to about the mid-1920s so that they could have all the wings intact. That's what's their goal. And they closed the hotel and stripped all the carpets and sold all the furniture and did, all those kind of things to get it ready for the renovation. And unfortunately, that's when the bottom dropped out of the real estate market.
2008. Mm-hmm. A year that shall live in infamy in Florida forever.
And well,
it changed a lot of lives.
Yeah, but we didn't think it would last this long, as long as it did. And unfortunately, it lasted long enough that the everybody who had invested in the hotel couldn't afford
to
do that.
I know. That was the year that we were supposed to start filming my movie here in at Fantasy of Flight with Debbie Reynolds. And we were scheduled to start in the end of 2008. And of course, everything fell to pieces. Yeah, but meanwhile, so you're writing and you're...
Yeah, so I was writing the book with the idea of, you know, making my budding novelist career join with the rebuilding of the hotel, and we were going to be very, you know, simpatico. And unfortunately, then everything fell apart. So my mission changed into hopefully selling enough copies of my book, the first book, Pearls, that would get into the hands of enough people, and maybe somebody with the mega financing
would come in
and save the hotel.
And unfortunately,
several people did step up trying to save it. But again, it was just a bad timing. And by the time money was back in the market
for real estate, it was too late. They already tore it down. I don't even want to say what they built.
They're building still.
They're still building townhouses and stuff.
Ironically, because my plan is to eventually move to the country of Belize. So we sold our home this year. And ironically, I'm living right across the street from the building. And every day as I'm trying to leave, I'm being impacted by this development.
It's sort of sad.
It's sad.
It is sad.
But like I said, I've decided not to focus on the sadness and to just focus on.
And you've become a
history
stellar writer. I mean, you just it's just amazing. And not only have you written three wonderful books, but now you're helping other people. Tell us about this new sort of side career of yours.
I suddenly realized it's just like writing or coming up with ideas for books. It took me a long time to realize that everybody doesn't have that ability any more than everybody has an ability to sing a song on stage, you know. And so as I realized that, and my passion is I love doing research. And one of the things, of course, I was researching was writing. And then I would share everything that I learned with a group of people. I had a group called Clearwater Writers. It's still in existence. I just stepped down as the leader after 10 years.
The most popular writing group in the area.
Yeah, we have about 570 members, I believe. But every week or every other week, we would show different lessons on the writing career, just different aspects. Uh-huh. And so... Then I'm a member of the Bay Area chapter of the Professional Writers Guild, and recently I was selected to do a 4-hour presentation on these things because I've gotten so much knowledge about writing fiction that I love to share it. And so that went over really well, and now I've been invited to speak at the upcoming, November the 2nd, the upcoming Local Authors Expo at the New Tampa Regional Library.
Wow.
And so I'll be giving a free workshop, if anybody can attend that. That's a free workshop on world building.
Okay. Well, what is world building? Well, we're talking about this, because this is something that authors sometimes don't realize. They've got to develop a whole world.
Well that's basically, in a nutshell, world building is the act of creating characters and places that don't exist in the real world. It's a critical component of all works of fiction, even no matter if it's, sometimes the changes between the real world and the one you're writing about are rather insignificant. You invent a company that doesn't exist, and the people who work there don't exist, and of course the conflict doesn't exist. So, but everything else in the world, you're in Boston, or whatever, wherever you're writing. Then there's other ones that are, you invent everything, and a great one of that is Tolkien's Lord of the Rings series, where everything is imaginary. The characters, the creatures that populate his world. And even the things that exist in our world, that exist in Lord of the Rings, like, trees, The trees might actually talk and walk, or something as common as a ring, which of course, you know, we all wear rings, but in his, it holds mystical powers that can control the world, you know. So when you're world building, a lot of that gets complex. And if you don't have a clear picture of your world in your mind when you start writing, how will your reader ever have a clear picture of your world? So the trick is to develop your world, write down all the aspects of what happens in your world, from the ruling body of your world to the plants and animals that exist there. Obviously, the conflict, how it affects your world, how it affects your characters, how your characters wind up becoming important. All of that, you've got to, you know, keep track of everything.
How did you handle your research? Are you one of these people who keeps everything on the computer? Do you do cards? You know, everybody has a different way of how they...
Mostly it's all of the above. I have files of, if I find an interesting article about the Bellevue Biltmore or about local history or anything that I think might pertain to local history. I just pulled an article yesterday out of a file that is about the first pier that was built off of Clearwater Beach. And it happened to be in 1897 when the hotel opened. So the book I'm writing about building the hotel cannot include any piers on Clearwater Beach. They didn't exist yet. So knowing all those facts, I put those into a file on my computer as I'm building my world. And then I reference that with a timeline. One part of my world building part is to write a timeline. Another one is to write a little bit about each character, how they play into the others, what they look like, so that I don't have a character being blonde in one scene and redhead in another. And then all the things that happen for me, because I'm so particular about the history being correct, I have to keep the timeline of what was actually happening in the world, what my characters would know about.
That's important. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, funny when I do get books where it doesn't, I mean, I know that's mm-hmm. not, that didn't occur at that time or wasn't available at that time. So it's funny when I notice these things.
Yeah, and that's key. If you're writing a historic novel about that takes place during the Civil War, you need to make sure that it's happening in the right states. You know, like you can't have New York suddenly being the center of the conflict when obviously it wasn't. And
you can't have them taking their mint julep out of an Amano refrigerator.
Exactly. Yeah. Just even to have ice, you know, or anything. Yeah. You have to be very careful about what you write, unless you're writing an alternative history. An example of that might be they won the Civil War. The Revolution was lost. Lost. You know, something, anything like that, where you go through World War II, where, you know, Hitler managed to.
So, do you do everything in Word? Do you keep your documents in Word?
I do. Yeah, and I recommend that to all writers because most people that you're going to be publishing with, anything interacting with editors, anybody who's going to design the inside of your book, any of these people are going to have the Word program.
Yeah.
And so. And I not only recommend using Word, but using a common font like Courier or Times New Roman, because otherwise when you send these files off, when they open up.
Oh, they hate it. They go crazy. Oh, my gosh, you can't.
Sure. Because all the quote marks might turn into question marks,
exactly.
All kinds of things like that. So, so I recommend that very strongly. But what I do to keep track of my world is I design my book. And I write with short chapters, and every chapter, when in the rough draft, has a very long title. So then I can zoom back to what I know what's happening in that chapter. But at the very beginning of the book, I put one chapter which is called Characters, another one which is called Timeline, and so I can just use the navigation function to click right back onto those. And then when I get, after I've done my final draft to where, you know, I'm done with all that, I cut those chapters. I save it first.
Okay, let's save everything first. Listen, we're going to stop for a moment with you, and we're going to do a commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to continue talking to you. We're going to wait for Mo to call in, and we'll talk more about your writing experience. Okay.
Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with a very, very special guest. I can just say his name, Mo. Hi, Mo.
Hello.
Okay, well, of course, your full name is Mosiah Bridges, but I think everybody in America has seen you on Shark Tank, and they just call you Mo.
Definitely.
Well, it is such an honor to talk to you, Mo. I love your book. It's called Mo's Bows, A Young Person's Guide to Startup Success. Measure, cut, stitch your way to great business. And it is a wonderful book.
Thank you. Thank you. I worked really hard on it, so I'm glad you like it.
Well, you know, I'm telling people, it's not just for kids. Any adult who's thinking of starting a business should start with your book, because
it's
inspirational, it's clever, it's beautifully done, and I just think that everybody will benefit from reading your book. I have in the studio with me today an author, and I call her a warrior author, because she... her name is Bonsu Branvik. Say hi.
Hi, Mo.
And
hello.
Bonsu, she did a major campaign to try to save a famous hotel here in Florida. And you are also a warrior in the business world now, because you are out there trying to get kids interested in business.
Yes. I think it's very important for kids to start at a young age, because that gives them more time to, you know, really grasp what they want to do and really pursue that.
And now at the age of 17, most 17-year-olds don't know anything. Mo's Bows has been everywhere. Of course, everybody saw you on Shark Tank. You were 9 years old at the time. You were absolutely adorable, and you still are.
Thank you.
You still are. But I know, of course, I wanted to ask, is it your mother's birthday?
Yes, no, it was yesterday.
Where was yesterday? And her name is Tramika Morris. And,
yes,
you know, I just think she is absolutely fantastic. She has done such a great job in raising you with the right attitude and with encouraging you the way that you have, you know, just grasped success, but in a way to help other people.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
Well, tell us some of the places where you're, well, of course, your bow tie went straight to the president. I mean, this is pretty great, but it's been in many, many stores, and many stores carry your beautiful, beautiful bows. This is pretty exciting.
Thank you.
Tell me more about where can we find a Mo's Bows? Where are some of the...
Oh, you can find a Mo's Bow at my website, which is mosbowsmemphis.com. And you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at mosbowsmemphis.
Well, that's great. And the wonderful thing about you also have a foundation, and you are, you know, very active in helping other people. So it's really great. Now, when we, you know, people get your book, and I think that, as I said, I would recommend this book to everybody who's thinking of starting a business. But when you you have quite a few interesting chapters there, what do you want to tell us about starting a business?
Well, I think starting a business really starts with the Bows of Business, which is an acronym that I created in the book. B being believing yourself, O, which is the opportunity to give back, W, work hard, and S, support. And with those things, you can really jumpstart anything you want to do that you think you can believe in and invest in yourself in, and especially in business. It's really useful.
Because having the support, and you were very lucky with having a wonderful, wonderful mother and family and people around you who supported your idea. Tell us, my listeners, how you came out with the idea for doing a bow tie.
Well, for doing the bow tie, when I was younger, my dad had a really great fashion sense. So I think I really picked that up and ran with it. And from then, I just became in love with bow ties. But the problem was I couldn't find bow ties that fit my style. So I asked my grandmother, who had been sewing for such a long time, to teach me how to sew.
Well, that was so clever of you. And as you said, it took hard work. You learned how to do it. You got out there. And they are beautiful. Your bow ties they are just gorgeous. And I would love to see more people wearing them. And I think, you know, for men and women, I love bow ties. And your designs are beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, you know, when you started your business, you faced struggles. What was it like when you got on Shark Tank?
Well, it was a very scary process, but I think I did get through it. It was very raw and real. I didn't get to meet the sharks until I actually got on the show and the cameras were rolling. But I went on asking for $500,000, but I didn't leave with the deal. I left with something even more valuable, which was a partnership with Damon John.
Yes. Oh, wow. That was such a wonderful thing that he stepped forward and just supported you. And I know that he saw in you so much of himself, the determination and the desire to get ahead and the willingness to work hard, because as you said, that W in Bows means you have to work hard. It's not an easy thing to build a business.
You have to put in the work.
So when you after Shark Tank, what was the next step after that? That really propelled you.
The next step after Shark Tank was looking for more fabric to complete the demand that I was offered, and creating more fabrics and really creating partnerships with different brands like the NBA, which is when I did the NBA draft, and I was a fashion correspondent for them, and also completing neckties and bow ties of all of the teams for the NBA as well.
Well, I think you've done really an incredible job, and of course with your family. Tell us about your dedication now to helping others and the foundation that you've established.
Well, my dedication and my foundation is the Go Mo Bow, and 100% of the proceeds from that bow go to help kids go to summer camp, and they're able to, you know, go swimming, but also childhood hunger is at its highest in the summertime. So I figured that if they get a meal at summer camp and, you know, still go swimming and have fun, and then they can be productive children.
Well, it is important. The summertime is a time that kids shouldn't have to worry about eating. They should be able to have fun and to think about wonderful things. And I think being inspired by you and what you've accomplished and what your family's accomplished, because it's important that, you know, so many times people think, well, people who go into business are going to be selfish and they're going to just make money for themselves. But you've proven that business can make a big return to humanity.
Yes, in community especially.
So what's the next step for you? What else are you going to be doing here?
The next step is definitely going to college. I don't know what college specifically I want to attend, but something definitely majoring in fashion and design. And after that, just creating a clothing line that isn't so accessory-based, but, like I said, clothing line.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'm sure that you will do it, and it's any fashion school should be so happy to have you join them, because you are a tremendous talent, and my goddaughter Kanisha is from Memphis. So she is going to be so thrilled today. She's listening.
Yes. She's
out there.
Tell her we talk.
Oh, she's going to be so happy. And I want to say a special hello to Kanisha, because she is a person like you who just gets out there and helps other people. And with this book, sometimes a book comes along and I say, wow, this book is just something that everybody should read, and it's very well written. It's really so easy to read, and that's also a wonderful thing. It's what I call a page turner. I was looking at it, you know, when I got the book, and I said, "Well, I want to know more. I want to see more." And you've done an absolutely terrific job. Tell us about your mother's involvement in the foundation, because I think, you know, I was a homeschool mom, so I taught my boys at home, and so I know that there's always this special connection that moms have with their babies.
Yes, my mom's involvement in the foundation and in the company has just played a big role, and that's just motivation. She helps different parents with different issues that they have with their children regarding business, and helping them get through their issues and goals and all of those things. But also just helping out with the foundation and really just setting a ground layout of what we did and how we got to where we are now.
Now, you are big on social media. That's where a lot of people find you.
Yes. So my social media is Mo's Bows Memphis for Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And my website is mosbowsmemphis.com.
And how do you go about getting viral? How do you get the, I mean, you're amazing at getting publicity for your company.
Yes, well, I don't think there's a real trick to, like, getting viral. I think if you have it, you have it, and people like what they like. So if you do something that, you know, could help other people, but also people like it and people like the look of it and it's colorful and it gets people's attention, then I think you're most like more likely to get go viral than someone who doesn't do all of those things. But also, there is some of those times where you could be not doing anything and you could still get that attention. So it really just depends. I don't think there's a rhyme or a reason to it.
But, well, I will tell you one thing. There is in the W in your acronym, that working, that is the part that I think you're fluffing off a little bit there, Mo. It is very difficult to get that attention unless, you know, I mean, obviously, like what you said, some people get attention for having done nothing. But when you're trying to promote a cause, that work that you do where you don't let an opportunity pass, where you're not trying to advertise your business or make connections or try and do research on who can use your help from the foundation you're creating, that's a lot of work. And so I don't want you to play that off.
He works hard, I can tell you. And the fact that even from a young age, you believed in yourself. And that B is a very important letter, because people will never succeed if they don't believe in themselves.
Exactly. And I think believing in yourself means to invest in yourself.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You do have to do that.
Well, and that's what you're going to college. And I was very happy to hear that, because a lot of people, once they've met success, you know, don't understand that there is a whole larger world out there. And to keep improving yourself, and the idea you're going to college, I think, is a phenomenal idea.
Well, I think that you will be a great asset to any school that you attend, and they will be very, very proud to have you as a student and later on as a teacher, because I'm sure that you'll continue on in fashion and become a real fashion star, because you have that fashion sense and the color sense. I love the colors that you select. They're dynamic and dramatic, and they make people feel good.
Thank you. And that's my whole slogan. You feel good and you look good. You look good and you feel good. And you can do that in a Mo's boat.
That's absolutely true. And, I this program is called Joy on Paper, and you have found the joy of material and come out with beautiful, beautiful things. And I'm just an honor to talk to you. And I know that with Dave and John as a great supporter of yours, and President Obama wearing your bow tie. I mean, I think it's just really exciting. You are certainly an inspiration to all, not just young people, but I'm sure you're going to go out there and talk to a lot of young people, but an inspiration to everybody who wants to start a business, because they can learn from you. And I want to say the name of the book again is Mo's Bows, A Young Person's Guide to Startup Success, Measure, Cut, Stitch Your Way to a Great Business. And it's by Mosiah Bridges and, of course, your mom, Tramika Morris. And the two of you have done an absolutely terrific job. This book is so readable and so much fun to read with all the little stories
thank
that you have in there. Mo, I want to thank you again, and people can go and find your webpage, and everybody, I think everybody in America now knows Mo's Bows, and I just want to, again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. I really enjoy myself.
Okay. Bye-bye, Mo. Bye.
Bye, Mo.
Bye.
Oh. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
It gives you a kick to see somebody who does this. I mean,
the idea that, you know, he would come up with an idea and pursue it to that extent that he learned to sew and everything is extremely impressive.
Yeah, he was determined. And as if anybody, he's in all the big stores, Neiman Marcus and all of them, Macy's, of the big ones carry his work. And they are colorful and cheerful. Mm-hmm. And there was a time when... back in the 70s, when women used to wear bow ties a lot, Yeah, I think it's sort of around that Annie Hall era.
Well, that's why I was hoping that he might make bows for little girls' hair.
Yeah, he should.
I think that would be a...
Absolutely, because his color sense, he has color sense of bright, dramatic colors and or patterns that really, you stop and you say, whoa, that's something. And they're original and they're smart and he's very clever.
Well, he definitely has the edge on a lot of the people he'll be starting school with are just coming out of school, and their biggest things were just, you know, getting together with their friends and everything. So he'll have an edge when he starts school. It'll be interesting. I hope that he, you know, takes that and continues to develop it.
Well, I think he's got a terrific family behind him. His mother, who is just an amazing woman, and who helped him with the book and just helped in general, and his whole family. But they have the right attitude that I think they, right from the beginning, they taught him, you might make money for yourself,
your
for the family, for the college, whatever, but also give, share.
Yeah.
And that's the beautiful thing about it. And he supports St. Jude's, which, by the way, if you are not supporting St. Jude's, what's wrong with you? I love St. Jude's. I think they are so terrific.
Yeah.
They are amazing people. And so, but do get this book. If you're starting a business, he's got everything in there, really, right? Give you an idea how to start a business.
Yeah. Well, I think it's exciting. I'll see about, my granddaughter is 6 years old, and I'm always looking for things to inspire her. Right now, you know, she's finally getting over the part of thinking I want to grow up and be a mermaid. When I used to ask her what she wanted to do for a job when she grew up, she told me she wanted to be the tooth fairy. So, you know, this idea of, you know, she is always, even though it's, of course, imagination, but right now I want her to learn that you can do things. And so this book would be a great one to read to her to let her know that he went on Shark Tank at 9. That doesn't mean that he started at 9. He had to start when he was about 7 years old in order to learn to sew and to get that all together.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important lesson for all parents who are listening, to not assume that all your child can do is, you know, go out and play and learn to ride a bicycle.
Or
you know,
just give them electronic toys to keep them quiet.
Exactly.
Do not do that. Really, really. I was talking to David Baldacci, and his mother, let's say it's... She didn't do it just to keep him quiet, but she gave him a notebook. She said, write something. Mm. Now, can you imagine if she had given him some electronic toys?
Tablet.
There weren't any electronic toys when he was that young. Yeah. And said, you know, just shut up and stay in the corner. This isn't the right attitude. You want to give them things that they can work with, that they can do something.
Well, what you're pointing to is imagination. And the problem with a tablet or anything like that is all of it's been designed. There isn't, you know, if you have to work your way through a path or crush candy or whatever you're doing, it's all done for you.
To tell you the truth, it numbs your mind. It does.
It stagnates your creativity.
Oh,
and imagination is like a muscle in that it has to be worked to develop. And
which is something you teach in your writing classes.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to work that imagination, because if you give a kid a cardboard box, that cardboard box can turn into anything from a kitchen to a spaceship to, you know,
a robot to
anything. And then they have to use their imagination. And that's one of the things that I love about books, is that it requires your imagination to fill in. I'll paint you a picture, and you have to imagine it. And so if I were to draw what I see what I imagine, like, until it's made into a movie, The Lord of the Rings, I pictured as being quite different than what I actually saw in the movie. But once you see it in a movie, you can't really imagine it any differently.
Yes. Yes.
And so that's where I said, you know, take your kids and give them that gift of imagination. Take away the things that have, you know.
Well, that's why I refuse to see Emma, the movie. I mean, Emma, to me, is so real.
Mm-hmm.
And it propelled me, you know, Jane Austen propelled me to move to England because I wanted to be in her
world.
So I have never seen any of the Emma movies because I just can't do it.
Yeah. Well, that's the one problem with it. Once you have taken that away, and made it. I love movies. We go to a lot of movies and all that. So I don't.
And we hope actually that your books are turned into a movie.
That would be wonderful.
Because it'd be wonderful.
But at the same time, I will always encourage people to read the book first.
Yes.
Because especially even with the really famous ones, the Harry Potter series, you get a fraction in the movie of what you got in the book. So when you read the book, you imagine everything, and it's wonderful.
The books are so much better.
And when the movie does come up, it augments what you've already imagined. And there's so many parts of the book that, you never see, but you understand that they're there because, you read the book and you know what's beyond those walls.
Well, one of the things that you do in your class, you talk about story building and coming out with characters and being creative.
Right. And that's where it's like, where do I find my characters? And I'm like, open your eyes, and instead of like just sitting there, again, using your tablet while you're waiting at the DMV or whatever, look around you. Don't be afraid to, some people call it eavesdropping. I call it dipping into a conversation.
But listen, I love to dip.
Yeah, listen to what people are saying around you. And when you come up with a good line, you hear a good line, or you see a character that, is really unusual, write that down and save those character ideas. If you see something, I always said, play a game as you're driving. When you're at a stoplight, look in the car next to you and pretend you were hired to follow that person. And why were you hired to follow that person? And, just let your imagination run wild with what did he do? Is he, harboring secrets? Is he, is he cheating on his wife? Whatever. And let your imagination run wild. And when you hit on an idea, I have a file called Book Ideas. And I will write down the kernel of an idea. And just recently when we were moving, I was, merging some files and stuff like that. And I have gone back to where I said I can live to be 180, and I'll never write all the books that I have in my file now. But I will take characters, and I'll dip into my potential character lists, potential idea lists, and some of them are used in my novels that I'm writing right now. Other ones, you just, the people that you see, the things that you hear about, Moe's Bose. You can talk about him, and it's like, what would a child do? What could they create? And, so you can just put that in as an idea for somebody who might be a secondary character in one of your next books, is, just somebody who is really bright and said, well, why can't I do it? I'm 7, I'm 9, whatever. Why can't I do it? And then all of a sudden, that person can become a character in your book of that hopefully will inspire other people.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's, it's really, when I talk about the joy on paper, it is so much fun to see your words on paper, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
It's so thrilling. And I think that you're doing a terrific job in helping people sort of get their minds organized about being a writer, like coming out with understanding their target audience, because this is something important.
And that is really critical. And I was going to, in a recent training session that I gave, I was selected, I think I mentioned, by the Bay Area chapter of the Professional Writers Guild to give a 4-hour training session, and I was so honored to do that. But one of the topics they wanted to know was how to select my genre and how do I do my potential audience. And so I was writing up that, and I went to Wikipedia, and Wikipedia lists 10 printed pages of genres, because you not only have your basic genre, you have subgenres and sub-subgenres. An example would be fantasy. One subgenre of fantasy is paranormal. Under paranormal, you have the sub-subgenre of vampires and werewolves and ghosts and all these different things, and then you go into those, and those would have different genres underneath there. So I tell all the writers to pick your genre. First of all, go to Wikipedia, and just go through and start highlighting and say, now, obviously, you know if it's nonfiction or fiction, so immediately you know which section to look in. And then you start going through, reading it, and highlighting all the things that your genre might be. And then you start condensing it down. And it might be a mixed genre book. Mine, I tease, it's like they contain like five or six different genres, you know, that I could call them. It could be, you know, historical. It could be paranormal. It could be romance. It could be mystery. It could be, you know, even time travel.
Yeah, it is. It is all of them.
It's all of those things. So if you find that it's a mixed genre, don't let that scare you. But remember that you have to be able to classify. It's less frightening now that there's less, you know, brick and mortar stores and more online, because the difference is the poor bookstore had to know what shelf to put your book on. They couldn't put it in paranormal and historical.
Yeah.
Where the advantage of having now the online, you have what's called meta tags. Yeah. And so you can say that it's all of these things. And then it'll pull up.
Jump up on Amazon. And you want to be in the right category, but, so that your book will be at the right level. Mm-hmm. I recently was reading a spy book. I mean, it's a spy book. Excuse me. It's thriller set in Europe. And it was under some weird subgenre, and I thought, what? Where did it get? It didn't make any sense.
That's a very valid point. So when you're choosing your genre, don't go too much to the fringes. Like if your book contains one historic scene, do not put it under historical.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, because your readers are gonna they expect a certain thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if it's
Bonsu, I am looking at the clock.
Oh, my.
Time does fly. But the nice thing is that you're just down the street, so you can come back soon, okay?
I would love to.
So we'll have you back, and we'll talk more about writing and the process of writing. You can tell us more about the different subjects that you cover in your lectures.
And again, for the listeners who are in the Tampa Bay area.
Yeah, I wanted to mention this one again.
That'll be November the 2nd. It's from 10 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon at the new Tampa Regional Library. It is free, so I'm hoping some people will come out. If you're wanting to attend my workshop, it's going to be from 12:30 until 1:30, and it'll be on the specific topic of world building. And I'm known for staying after and answering everybody's questions.
Okay, and it's Bonsu Brandvik, and you can find her on Amazon. And we'll talk. Well, I'm going to have her back, so we then talk about how she has preserved the photos from the hotel.
Fascinating story,
and about going around in the attics too and tunnels, because she has certainly found that joy on paper that I talk about all the time. Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really, really lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book or books will be turned into a film, a streaming video, or a major motion picture, or something
or
like that.
Or an audiobook.
Oh, wow. You know, this is Bonsu's books were made for the screen. They are so, so great. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. And he's saluting me. And I'm saluting him, because I just wish I was a general. It would be so cool. I would be a great general. I'm not saying that I'm bossy, although I have been. That's been mentioned a few times. Okay, bye-bye now. Everybody, have a great day. Bye. We'll be right back.